Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tahwai. Bahrain's revolution has continued. In the most recent demonstrations, protesters demanded the release of women prisoners, many of them locked up during more than a year of protests against the ruling regime. This includes Zainab Al-Khawaja, daughter of a jailed activist, Abdul Hadi Al-Khawaja, both on a hunger strike and both detained. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State received her guest, the Crown Prince of the Persian Gulf island of Bahrain in the United States. Bahrain's developments, U.S. relations, and its future will be the subject of this edition of the Press TV News Analysis.
Bahraini protesters have once again staged rallies in support of the country's political prisoners. This time they took to the streets of Dar Kolab and Sanabes villages. The protesters in Shahrakan and Karzakan villages hit the streets in the early hours of the morning. They burn tires and block roads to protest the recent arrest of women activists. Anti-monarchy protests have continued almost on a daily basis in defiance of the Saudi-backed crackdown on protests. More than 80 anti-regime protesters have lost their lives at the hand of regime forces since last year. But despite blatant human rights violations and condemnation by the rights groups, the international community remains indifferent to the situation in Bahrain. The West, in particular, seems to be looking for its best interest when it comes to supporting the different revolutions in the region. Let's take the U.S. stance on the Egyptian revolution.
And we urge that all parties exercise restraint and refrain from violence, but our assessment is that the Egyptian government is stable.
Now, compare that with its position on the uprising in Bahrain.
So our advice to all sides is that they must take steps now to negotiate toward a political resolution.
It may be relevant to point out that Bahrain is home to America's Fifth Fleet, and Egypt was one Arab nation with close relations with Israel under Mubarak's 30-year-old dictatorial reign. Washington has always supported authoritarian regimes, regardless of their human rights records or their oppressive policies. The same stands true about ties between Riyadh and Washington. The Obama administration has failed to even acknowledge any uprisings in Saudi Arabia, despite the kingdom's long record of human rights violations and crackdowns on anti-regime protests, especially in the oil-rich eastern province. Now, where does the U.S. stand when it comes to the Syrian unrest?
There will be increasingly capable opposition forces. They will, from somewhere, somehow, find the means to defend themselves as well as begin offensive measures.
U.S. regional allies, however, say they don't mind militarizing the conflict in Syria in the hopes of getting rid of President Bashar al-Assad. Washington's foreign policy towards different conflicts in the Middle East represents a clear double standard. The Obama administration supports regime change in some cases, but rejects popular uprisings in others. Apparently, what's good for Syria doesn't work for Bahrain or Saudi Arabia.
Let me introduce our guest from the Bahrain Center for Human Rights. Abbas Al-Omran joins us from London. We have political analyst Rula Talj, who joins us from Beirut, and former assistant professor at the University of Bahrain, Colin Cavell, joins us from Austin. I'd like to welcome you all. Let me start first with you, if I may. Abbas Al-Omran, set the stage for us. A couple of developments. A very prominent human rights activist is still there in detainment while on a hunger strike, namely Abdul Hadi Al-Khawaja. 90 days of his hunger strike. Then you have his daughter, Zainab, also detained, also on a hunger strike. And then his trial, along with a retrial of 20 other medical professionals, postponed for a month. Your response and then your evaluation of how the regime there has treated protesters.
The regime in Bahrain deal with the protesters as the revolution started last year, 14th of February. They use highly aggressive forces and against the peaceful protester. And when I applied the martial law, when the Saudi troops came across the Bahraini borders in last year and put the military courts and sentenced a lot of people in that very quick courts, a lot of them are still there at the prisoners. Now in Bahrain, if you would like to evaluate the situation and compare with that, with that time, still there is more than 800 prisoners still at the jail. Even though the Professor Sharif Bassiouni recommended in his reports, PICI reports, they said all the prisoners related to the prisoner of conscience should be immediately released. As I told, more than 800 people are still there. And when Abdelhadi Al-Khwaja, as an example, he came and made a hunger strike to call about his rights to release and to get his freedom, the Bahraini regime ignored totally its voice or its hunger strike. And the Bahraini regime not stop only at that step. They go after a very long period, after Abdelhadi reached nowadays, in 90 days, they came and bent him at the bed of the bed of the hospital and forced him to get and feed him by force. And that's also considered to be type of torture. When his daughter Zainab Al-Khwaja tried to move here and there to know about his his situation, the Bahraini regime came and arrested her with a series of charges, and she now appeared for four courts. Because she had been...
Let me come to you, Rula Talsh. Rula Talsh, just another development which happened a few days ago was the arrest of another prominent human rights activist, Nabil Rajab, over, well, what they said, insulting tweets. It seems like the Bahraini regime is increasing the targeting of human rights defenders by these Saudi-backed forces. What do you make of this, given the fact that they are claiming reforms are in progress, and yet... this an example of what they're doing?
Good evening. In order to, before I answer your questions, I am like many Arabs who watched the revolutions in the early days with a romantic feeling, believing in the right of the people throughout the Arab world to ask for their civil rights. However, today I'm afraid that those same people throughout the Arab world, including Bahrain, Syria, Egypt, everywhere, they are being used to fuel that hatred between the Sunnis and the Shia in order to lead to a civil strife between the different sects, which will lead to the division of the Muslim world. So having said that, of course, I do not appreciate the crackdown of the Bahraini demonstrations, especially that in Bahrain, unlike Syria, the demonstrators are being extremely peaceful and they haven't threatened yet the national security issue. So far, I think the Bahrainis backed by the Saudis feel safe from U.S. and Western punishment. But the thing they do not know yet, the main target for the Western world is to crack down the regimes in the Gulf countries. Of course, today they would like to use them as tools to weaken the Muslim world as such. However, the main target of the U.S. and different Western countries is to crack down the Wahhabi regimes throughout the Gulf countries. And I think the Bahraini game is an extremely dangerous game for the Gulf countries, and I'm kind of surprised how come they haven't seen that yet, well, the Saudis and the Qataris.
Interesting that you say that. I'm trying to make sure that I'm digesting what you said there, Rula Talsh. Are you saying that it is the same countries, these Arab countries, that are using the sectarian issue in order to divide themselves? Or are you saying that perhaps The U.S. maybe that's doing this. Tell us where this has emanated from, where we can see clearly it being on display in Bahrain.
I don't think that the Arab countries are dividing themselves. I'm pretty sure today, after seeing, watching the whole post-revolutions in the Arab world, I'm kind of sure that there is a force, an outside force, trying to use the sectarian strife in order to weaken and divide the Muslim world. And unfortunately, our people are extremely emotional and they are an easy target for any conspiracy. And I have my own reasons to believe it's a Western plan to divide and weaken the Muslim world, yes.
Okay. Well, let's look at one of those Western countries, Colin Cavell. And I'm going to start with a quote. The quote being, "I am delighted to welcome His Royal Highness. Bahrain is a valued ally of the United States." That's the U.S. reception by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton of Bahrain's Crown Prince. How important an ally is Bahrain when U.S.'s ally is breaking human rights, like the case that we have of the two al-Khawajas?
Kaveh, Bahrain, as I've said often over the past year, is a strategic geopolitical necessity for the U.S. if it wants to maintain hegemonic control over the Middle East. They have realized that the populations in these Arab countries are sick and tired of their autocratic, tyrannical rulers that have been in power for the last 30, 40, sometimes more years. And in order to maintain hegemonic control, they have to clean house. They have to put new leaders in power and have some semblance of democratic rule. Not much, but not to upset the U.S. control, but some semblance to make U.S. hegemony continue into the next generation. And so welcoming Salman bin Hamad al-Khalifa to Washington right now is an attempt to put the Khalifas at rest, to say we're backing you. Don't worry, because we have an upcoming presidential election in the United States, and they don't want the Khalifas or Abdulaziz bin Saud in Saudi Arabia to funnel tons of money to the oppositional forces, the Republican Party in the United States, even though that's probably what's going to happen anyway.
Well, but the tone of U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Colin Cavell, doesn't that somewhat also show their, how can I say, not displaying any concern when she says, "I'm looking forward to a chance to talk over with His Royal Highness a number of the issues, both internally and externally, that Bahrain is dealing with." I mean, that's quite a contrast how the U.S. has dealt with some of the other countries. Much prior to this, looking at how they talked about Egypt, and then looking how they've talked about Yemen and how they dealt with Yemen. I mean, you know, put that into perspective for us, especially the way they have talked about opposition of these different countries compared to the opposition in Bahrain.
Bahrain is a sick child of the family, and Hillary Clinton does not want to upset the Khalifas too much. The Khalifas are very nervous right now. The Saudi king and monarchy is very nervous right now. All of the monarchs in the GCC countries are very nervous right now. In Bahrain, you've got Nabil Rajab in prison. You've got Abdullah al-Khawaja in prison on a hunger strike. You've got his daughter, Zainab al-Khawaja, in prison. You've got the head of Amal, Sheikh Mahfoud, in prison. You've got the head of WAD, the political party Promise, Ibrahim Sharif, in prison. You've got over 400,000 citizens on the street against the regime. So the Khalifas are very nervous right now. And what Clinton is doing, what Barack Obama has instructed Clinton to do right now, is to calm the nerves of the Khalifas until after the election. But they recognize that reform has to come in order for the U.S. to maintain hegemonic control, and they will have reforms should Barack Obama be reelected president. He is not going to go out and leave the Gulf monarchs as they are.
Well, calming the nerves of the U.S. president, especially in an election year, Abbas al-Omran has been marked by, well, let's look at one statistics in which 60 children, that's 60, in their teens, in detention, tortured, some sentenced to 15 years. Give us more examples of what has been going on in Bahrain. We understand they're targeting women, rights activists, and of course, the way that they have conducted these trials or military trials.
The situation in Bahrain, you can't call it, it's leaving an announced martial law. The Bahraini regime in last September, they said the martial law have been released, while the actual cases, what's going on in the ground, it's exactly as the martial law is there. As I told you, there are still there more than 800 prisoner of conscience still there at the jail, and 25% of these are children under 18 years. There are a lot of checkpoints spread everywhere in the Bahrain streets, especially at the entrance where the villages, the people came for demonstrations. Also, more than 88 people have been killed in Bahrain, and no real investigation have been made to find the truth of all of this. And especially if you compare this number of killing, it is very high if you compare it to the Bahraini population. If you relate it with the population of Egypt, it will reach more than 10,000. That's reflect the crackdown, the level of a crackdown reach in Bahrain. Other things, nobody can express them rights in Bahrain, not only at the street, even though at the internet or using the Twitter. As you said, Nabil have been arrested beginning of this week before 5 days just because he tweet and express about his point of view. And just before I enter here the studio, there was a young girl, her age, 16 years, have been arrested just because they came down to the street with the other protester calling to release Nabil. The woman, there are more than 4 women have been arrested and taken to the court for a false, for a fake charges. And that's the situation in Bahrain. The figures, the leaders have been taken from the court of castration to the other courts, but okay, with keeping them at the jail with the same sentence. Actually, the Bahrain leaving the unannounced martial law.
Okay. Rulo Talja, then put in perspective for us, which you did somewhat prior. When it comes to Bahrain, and when we look at the region in the Middle East, when we look at the revolutions and the uprisings, doesn't it, in a sense, weaken the stance? Shouldn't it have weakened the stance of, for example, the U.S., of other countries that are allied with the U.S., in the way that the U.S. and its allies have dealt with some of the revolutions? We can refer to Egypt, we can refer to Yemen, and also the message that they are sending through their actions regarding the opposition.
From my point of view, what we are going through nowadays in the world, and specifically what's happening in the Arab world, is, in my opinion, a proxy world war between the West, known as the traditional West, Europe and the USA, and the new powers rising in the world, which are the BRICS countries. Unfortunately, this war is happening in the Arab world, and we are once again the victims of some geopolitical changes that are going to happen no matter what in the next decade or so. So one thing I'm convinced of, the U.S., they could tell the Bahrainis, the Saudis, the Qataris that they are allies and best friends, but it means nothing. You know, once the U.S. is your friend, you need to be very, very scared. If the U.S. is your enemy, you should be safe. And this has been the history of all regimes and all the powers that were allied to the U.S. So I'm not impressed at all by all the good, nice talks of the U.S. regarding Bahrain or elsewhere in the Gulf countries. So what's happening, the main target, in my opinion, of the U.S. is to weaken the Salafi and Wahhabi regimes throughout the Muslim world. That Frankenstein that they have created in order to combat the Soviet Union, which is Al-Qaeda and, sponsored by the Wahhabi rule in Saudi Arabia. Today, the U.S. would like to get rid of this Frankenstein with the least cost possible. So at the end of the day, once more, the U.S. is going to get rid of its old allies, but with a different weapon, by dividing and creating strifes throughout the Muslim world. At some point, the Russians and the new rising powers in the world, they are going, and they are already, and we could see it in Syria, and we will be seeing more and more efforts to stop what's happening in Egypt and elsewhere. Also for Russia, there is an old vendetta is to be taken from the Saudis and the role they played in dismantling the Soviet Union. So Russia is immediately concerned by what's happening, and as well as China. What might happen with the Salafis growing numbers in Asia. So that's why I'm not at all impressed but by what the Bahrainis and the Gulf countries are getting, by all the support they are getting from the U.S. I think dramatic changes are going to happen in the few next months. The U.S. Will be very busy with their campaigns. France changed president, and they will probably change policies towards the Middle East. And no matter what happens, we will see dramatic changes in Bahrain, but also in Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
On the positive side, is that what you mean?
On the what?
These changes, positive changes when you say that?
It depends from which point of view you're talking. Positive changes in my views, but negative changes for the kingdoms.
Okay. Well, Colin Covell, I like what Rula Tal said. If your country and America is your friend, you should be scared. If America is your enemy, then you should consider yourself safe. Is that, in a way, a description of American foreign policy and how they deal with countries? That some of the countries that they're allied with should be scared, these countries that are considered their allies?
Well, there's an old adage, Kaveh, that says, keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer. And that is exactly what the Barack and Obama administration is doing right now. They are trying to calm the Gulf monarchies until after the election. But they realize that they have to change these regimes. They have to get rid of the autocratic leaders, introduce some type of democratic reforms, because as Ms. Rula Taj has indicated, the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, are rising in power. Vladimir Putin was just inaugurated president again in Russia. He's consolidated his power. They're very strong in Europe. Sarkozy has lost the election to the socialists. People are tired of his imperialistic foreign excursion to Libya. So the United States is concerned about the rising BRIC powers. They know that now is the time to change these autocratic leaders if they're going to maintain hegemonic control. So yes, the regime should be very skeptical about U.S. intentions, but that's all they have to rely on, because the people cannot stand them. The people have an extreme distaste for these monarchies. In Bahrain in particular, with over three quarters of the population demonstrating on the streets on a regular basis, the regime is very nervous. Just 2 days ago, Kaveh, they have issued orders to crack down on anyone using broadcast media, anyone using social media, anyone so-called tarnishing the image of Bahrain, which means of course, as you know, speaking the truth about what's going on in Bahrain. I mean, putting Nabil Rajab in jail for tweeting, that's outrageous.
Okay, let's leave it there. Thank you very much. Let me thank our guests from the Bahrain Center for Human Rights, Abbas Al-Omran. Thank you. Political analyst Willa Tall from Beirut. Thank you. And former assistant professor at the University of Bahrain, Colin Covell. Thank you from Austin. And thank you, the viewer, for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Newsroom@PressTV.ir is our email address for any comments or suggestions. From me, Kavitavoy, and the entire team, it's goodbye.